And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour Podcast, episode 256, alongside Coach Wendy Mader, author of How to Swim Faster in 30 Days. Wendy, we've got a two-parter today, which is very interesting. We talked about this in our last episode. This involves a Skype consult winning giveaway offer, something like that.
Yeah, we had a fall giveaway, and one of our winners was Craig. And we finally, it took about a month to get this phone consult set up, but it was really good. It was really worth the wait. So we set up a time to talk. He asked me some questions, so I had an idea of what we were going to talk about. And then when we started the call, it was a little bit different than what we both anticipated. Maybe he got a little recording shy. But it was still a good call. Craig is a landscaper. He did his first triathlon in September. So I thought the call was going to be mostly about triathlon. But he started asking me about running and running questions, how to get faster, how, you know, kind of just about following a program and just general concepts about a running program, as well as some good questions. And we ended the call about 30, 40 minutes later. And then he had messaged me and he said, wait, I really didn't talk about what I wanted to talk about, which was sprint triathlon, you know, the progression of doing a sprint triathlon to a 70.3. So we got back on the call and we did another recording because I just wanted to be sure that he got what he won, which was ask me anything he wanted to ask me. So it was a really good conversation. We did break it up into two parts, which is cool, because as we were getting into the second consultation, we just started talking about triathlon, the new initiative that USAT has, and stuff like that. So really, I hope you guys like it, and we would love your feedback on this one.
Hey, if you got a question for us in the future, maybe you want that to be a discussion podcast, a little Q&A podcast, go to speakpipe.com/endurancehour. You can leave us a voicemail. We've got a, pardon me, a 90-second time limit. You can do this from your phone, laptop, desktop. Again, speakpipe.com/endurancehour. There's also a link on the right side of the endurancehour.com website. So if you want to leave us a voicemail from your computer there, it's very easy to do, and we can answer those in their own podcast. But until then, here is Wendy's one-on-one with Craig.
Really, I wanted to set this up. Like you already know, we gave away five Skype consultations for people like you to discuss anything health, fitness, or sport related. So thank you for filling out the online athlete profile. It kind of helped me get to know your experience, your goals, where you're at right now. And then I also asked you on Facebook what you wanted to talk about. And you had said you want to talk about how you get faster. What does that mean to you?
Right now, I'm just doing, coming up in September, I'm going to be doing a Sprint Plus that I did last year. And my goal is, I really didn't do a lot of preparation, but I placed seventh overall in my age group. But my question is, I want to get from seventh to the top three this year.
Okay, you're doing the same race then?
Correct.
What's the time variation?
I did it in an hour and 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the top seven people, including myself, were all within like 2 to 3 minutes of each other.
Oh, wow, that's not a lot at all.
No.
So specifically related to that specific question and that specific race, you know, I'm going to talk about a little bit about general, and then kind of focus in on that race. So generally, when you want to get faster at an event, you want to break up your training. So you put in your base endurance and then you put in your speed work. And you can also do the opposite. You can put in your speed work, and then you can put in more base endurance. It just really depends on the event you're training for. In your case, that half marathon's kind of in that in between needing endurance as well as wanting speed. So I think I'm a proponent of everyone, no matter what distance racing you're doing, you have to have some sort of base fitness so your body can handle the level of stress that intense training provides for you. And you also want to make sure you're training at the training zones, intensities that your current fitness is at. So for example, I mean, the generally is if you know you run a 5K running event in let's just say 30 minutes, your average pace is 10 minutes per mile. That's your threshold pace. Based on that 5K, that's your current threshold pace. That would be considered your zone four if you're training by heart rate or pacing zones. You're either going to train at that zone four heart rate or that zone four pace. And then you can take a percentage of that and get your endurance pace, your tempo pace, your lactate threshold pace, and your VO2 max pace. Does that make sense? Is that stuff you've already done?
No, I haven't.
And so what that does for you is it puts a purpose behind every workout. So now you're not just going and running 5 miles today. You're going to run 5 miles, and the purpose of it is either tempo, endurance, recovery, threshold, or speed. Speed is the VO2. So in a training week, a 7-day training week, you want to balance having enough endurance recovery workouts as well as enough speed workouts. And the idea is when you're training fast, you're in the right zone. You're at your threshold / speed VO2 max zone, whether that's heart rate or pace or effort. And we can translate this all to a rate of perceived effort scale. And when you're recovering, you're really in your recovery pace. What happens to a lot of people, especially new athletes, whether they're runners or triathletes, myself included, way back in the day when I started, I always trained in what's called the gray zone. Not too hard, but not too easy. And so because I did that, when I wanted to go hard, I always had this like residual fatigue from the day before, because the day before wasn't really easy. It was kind of in between. It was kind of that 80 to 85% effort, that zone three. And I did that a lot. So I never really let my body recover and train really, really easy. And so I was never able to go train really, really fast. And so the time that you want to incorporate this, you know, speed training, you know, easy, hard days, is when you're kind of in that, you know, maybe about 8 weeks out from race day, you've already developed that base, and now you really want to work on sport-specific intensity. In your case, a half marathon. For a half marathon, you're not going to do a lot of speed VO2 max type workouts, but you're going to do a lot more threshold workouts, you know, up, you know, mile repeats, maybe half mile, 2 mile repeats at faster than race pace. Is this all making sense?
Yes.
Cool. So in your specific case, so that's where I'd start. I'd start with, you know, the basic training plan template, where let's assume you did your base work. You've been training for a while. You're kind of in that build phase, which is about 8 weeks out. How you'd structure your training is you would pick one day a week and do some faster than race pace efforts. I'd say maybe that 10K pace, if you know what that is. And then you would do some race pace efforts in your long run, because your long run, the half marathon, that's where you want to build up the time it takes to do your predicted marathon pace. Let's say maybe it's a 140 this year. And then the rest of the days are going to be easy / kind of easy recovery / endurance based. So you have those two key workouts that you really want to target the intensity for, because that's going to increase your fitness and that's going to make you faster.
All right.
And also for a race that you described where the top seven guys were all within, you know, a couple minutes of each other, a lot of it probably came down to pacing over the course of a half marathon. You know, go back and look at your, if you have it, look at your results, look at your pacing if you have those, if you have that data where you can see, did you go out too fast and not have a lot left at the end? Or did you go out too easy and you had way too much at the end and you could have picked up your pace sooner? A half marathon is a tricky distance to pace because it's not all out fast, but it's not easy either. And having said that, having a very strategic race pace plan ahead of time, so you know from your training, your current fitness and goals, you know race day, how you're going to execute the event. You know, the first 5K, couple miles is going to be, you know, at that, still a continuation of warm up. Maybe you're at an RPE of 6. You're feeling good, but you're not going too hard. And then over the next, you know, 10K, you start to build up your pace to race pace effort. And then that final, you know, final 8K is where you try to gun it. I always like athletes to try to be prepared to do what's called a negative split, where they're able to push the second half faster than the first half, because you want to finish feeling good. You know, no matter what, I think it's really important. You want to finish feeling strong and that you put in your maximum effort. You don't want to start that way and then hit the wall and, you know, not have anything left on the tank for that final, you know, 5 to 8K of a half marathon. So that's important to have that plan before a time.
All right. Well, that definitely helps.
Now, what is your current 5K time? Do you have one?
I just ran a 5K, and I believe it was 23:40.
That's great. So what I would do if I were you, because I currently use, I go to a calculator called McMillan Running Calculator. It's a free calculator online. You're able to plug in your current 5K or current race distance, and then you plug in your goal event that you're training for and your goal race time, and then it'll spit out a bunch of paces for you that tells you, okay, when you're doing your tempo work, this is the pace. When you're doing your threshold work, this is the pace. When you're doing your VO2 max work, this is the pace. Same with endurance and recovery. So then, they base that off your current 5K time. And that's also very helpful to see how realistic it is. You know, if your 5K time is, like you said, you know, around 23 minutes, it's not realistic to go an hour and a half marathon. 23-minute 5K doesn't translate into an hour and a half marathon. So what I kind of started saying in the beginning, when you're working on a faster half marathon and or marathon, when you're working on trying to get faster for the longer distances, it's important to work on getting faster in your 5K, because a faster 5K will translate into a faster 10K, which translates into a faster half marathon, which will translate into a faster marathon.
All right.
You know, I like to tell people, you don't get faster in a 5K while you're training for a marathon. It doesn't work that way. So it's important to kind of take that stepping stone and keep setting those small objectives, those small short-term goals, as you're training for the long-term goal, which in your case is a half marathon, you know, maybe in about 140, 141 pace or whatever it takes to get that top three.
Sure.
Now, having said that, would you be happy if you ran a 142 but didn't get top three?
Probably.
Okay, good. I would too. I mean, I think, you know, if you set a personal record, but you didn't get the top three placing, it's still, a great achievement, and you're still very successful at what you did. And I think more importantly than that is if you go into an event and you execute it as you plan, that's success in itself, because executing an event as you plan to execute it is a little challenging, because you may get caught up in the hype and the excitement of the race. You may get caught up in running with friends who either start off too slow or start off too fast. So just, as long as you know the race plan, the execution, making sure the goal is realistic and in line with the current fitness and the current training plan, then you're going to be successful race day.
All right. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is there any free apps out there that could help with that particular progression in my training?
Like a training plan?
Well, not a training plan, something that I can use to plug in certain things into the app, and it would help me as far as training, to where I wouldn't have to be looking at a watch. I could just listen in my headphones, and it would help keep me at a certain pace or whatever my workout.
So that's a good question. I don't know. Like, are you talking about like an app that you can say, okay, on today's training run, I want to do 4 1-mile repeats at an 8-minute mile pace?
Something like that. Maybe not that extensive, but
yeah. Not to my knowledge, but I'm sure someone listening to this podcast might want to chime in. That's an interesting question. I'd actually want to do my own research on that and figure that one out, because a lot of the GPS devices and Garmins and Timex watches and Polars and other Suunto, all these different devices, you can plug in your workout in the device and it'll beep. I've never done it. It'll chime in and kind of keep you on track. I bet you even one of those like activity track devices that tracks your steps might do something like that. But as far as an app, I kind of believe there's something out there. I just don't know of it.
Right. I have a Garmin 910 XT, but I'm just starting to get used to it.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of complicated to plug in all the different things right. that it's capable of.
That's why I don't use all the functions of any of my watches. I'm old school, though. I've been doing the sport for 26 years. So, I started when there was nothing, so I'm kind of used to having nothing, training by effort. I like to use the technology to help me learn my effort. And, I know my effort now because I've been doing it for so long. So I think the technology does provide some good feedback, but I do think some people get too hung up on the numbers and they fail to listen to their body because they get so uptight on following the certain pace that they don't realize their pace is off because maybe they're sick, maybe they're injured, maybe it's extremely hilly, or maybe it's extremely windy, or their nutrition was off, or they're dehydrated. There's a lot of things that affect heart rate, affect your pace, that affect these numbers. But when you use the numbers to get to learn your rate of perceived effort and get to learn what your body's telling you to do, I think you're more successful in your sport. That's just how I learned. And I'm still doing it 26 years later.
Yep, I agree. As far as liquid in training, is there anything that you can give me as far as a suggestion? I know that there's a lot of people that take and put the pink Himalayan salt as uh-huh. well as lemon in their water, and how much I should drink, throughout training.
Yeah, and that's a good question. It does vary person to person because everyone has a different what's called a sweat rate. The best way to calculate your sweat rate, you can do it on your own. And again, a lot of depends on what time of year you're training at, the humidity, the temperature. But a simple test is, you weigh yourself, you go for your let's say longer workout. Let's say it's a 10-mile run. And then you weigh yourself after. You don't intake anything. Weigh yourself before, weigh yourself after, see how much fluid you lose, that'll help determine how much fluid you need to intake. And there's a lot of calculators out there that'll help you with that. So let's say you lose, you weigh 100 pounds and you lose 5 pounds. That's a significant percent. That's 10% of your body weight. Your performance is going to go downhill. That probably won't happen to most people if they only weigh 100 pounds. But if you lose, so a 16 ounces, like if you, for every pound you lose, I believe the recommendation is to drink 16 ounces of fluid afterwards for recovery. Some people have a lot of salt in their sweat. I got a sweat rate test in 2007. I'd love to get another one because I think as I've gotten older, my sweat rate has definitely changed. But when I got my sweat rate tested, I do not have a lot of sodium in my sweat, and I get enough through Gatorade. Gatorade is the most commonly used drink out on a course. And so I don't take salt tabs or anything like that because I don't need to. So again, general recommendation is once you get over an hour, some people say hour and a half, but once you get over an hour workout, I would start intaking fluids. I wouldn't wait to start intaking them in an hour. I'd start sipping on water. You know, if you take 4 gulps, that's generally 4 ounces. If you take 8 gulps, that's generally 8 ounces. I would carry something and start drinking it at 30 minutes. I prefer to drink a little with a little bit of calories in it. I like to get liquid calories, and I like the water to taste good because that'll make me drink it. Some people have been successful with a product called Noon. It's just an electrolyte tablet that has maybe 1 calorie. So you don't take it for calories, you take it for the electrolytes, but it has some flavor. I personally don't like flavored water. I'd rather know that I'm drinking something like orange juice or Gatorade where I don't mind the extra calories and I like the taste better than just regular flavored water. So I'd start, you know, I'm doing the calculations. You know, if you're racing a half marathon, you're probably going to want to take 4 to 6 ounces, you know, maybe every 2 miles. At an aid station, maybe 4 ounces every 2 miles, especially if it's extremely hot. So you want to start practicing that in your training runs. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
And there's a lot of information out there that helps you do the calculations. I'm actually speaking with my friend who's a registered dietitian, so I'm going to ask her opinion on that one too.
Okay.
That's a good nutrition question.
Well, maybe when you find out the answer for that, then you could email me.
Yeah, for sure. What do you do now?
I usually take something with me if I'm running and put it behind me, or if I'm able to carry a pouch, you know, I stick a small bottle in there and take and mix up some, depending on how long of a run I'm going on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely it's needed. I learned the hard way. I mean, my very first half Ironman distance race was in 1995. My second one was in 1997, and I think both races I drank about a half a water bottle on the bike because I didn't know. I never practiced with anything. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. So I learned the hard way by getting really bad leg cramps, and I'm not a cramper. So you'll know if you tend to have a lot of, if you come back from a training day and you're covered in white salt, then you need more sodium while you're training. You probably need some electrolyte tablets. If you tend to get thirsty out there while you're training, you probably need to drink more than you currently are. We did a podcast, I'm going to email this to you, with, Dr. Alan Lim from Scratch Labs. We had a whole podcast on a talk that he gave us. And what the big thing that I got out of him, and this was about, I think this was last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, was he was a proponent of drinking to thirst. And I had actually been practicing that probably the year beforehand. Like I used to drink a lot more while I was training and racing than I do now. I've cut my fluid back intake a lot just wanted to try something out myself. And then to hear him talk about it, how important it is to just drink to thirst. And that works for me. It doesn't work for everyone else. So, it's just so individualized. You just want to make sure you're practicing whatever you're going to do race day in training, so you're not caught off guard by having to pee a lot during the race because you overhydrated.
And that was my next statement that I was going to bring up. It's hard if you're not doing it when you're practicing, when you get to race day, and depending on the you might be practicing where it's nice out, and then all of a sudden during race day it's really hot, and you maybe consume a little extra liquid, mm-hmm. and then you have to worry about going to the bathroom when you're halfway through the race, and that's right. Not a good thing.
Right, and that's what I learned. I'm someone who I drink water and I have to go to the bathroom right away. I'm hydrated the days leading up to a race. I don't drink a lot the day before, and I only drink coffee the morning of. That's just me, because if I drink coffee and water the morning of, I'm going to be in line for the Port-a-John too frequently. So I just start drinking probably midway, and then it sticks with me. And that's another reason that I like to drink not just plain water. I like to put something in my water bottle that's going to stick with me, some sort of calorie that's going to stick with me, like Gatorade. Because if I just drink plain water, it just goes right through me, and that doesn't work for me either.
Right.
But as far as a good point, so if you're training in a cooler climate, but you're going to race in a warmer, more humid climate, during that 8-week buildup, as you're doing your race specific preparation training, you want to try to do some training to acclimate to those hotter temperatures. The best recommendation I would say is maybe spending some time training on the treadmill indoors, because it's going to be a lot more, I think it's usually a lot hotter, a lot more humid training indoors if you live in a cooler climate, to try to acclimate a little bit more to your hydration needs before your race day. So you're just trying to simulate race day weather conditions. And the opposite is true. If you live in a hot climate where it's hot outside, but you're going to race in a cooler climate, you could also train indoors, because it may be cooler indoors due to air conditioning, to get ready for the cooler climate of where you're going to race. And then, this day and age, it's so varied. I mean, you never know what race day is going to bring. I think over the last 5 years, I've noticed you got to be prepared for hot or cold, because you never know what Mother Nature is going to bring. And rain and snow.
Case in point, where I live here in Washington, we had our marathon that we have every year. And the last couple years, we were in, believe it or not, in the first part of June, we were in the 90s.
Uh-huh. That's hot.
And everybody was just dying out there. I went from a low 7 pace to over an 8 pace, because it was so hot.
Yep.
I was gulping down the liquids and just trying to survive through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Another way to stay cool when you're not used to it, like in your case, is putting ice down, your top, or putting ice in a hat or a cap under your extremities. That kind of helps cool you off.
Yeah, and that's what they were doing to some people that were just, weekend warriors that were out there running and just trying to do the event. Mm-hmm. They were giving people a bunch of ice and doing that, and also giving out towels to people to cool them down on their necks.
Good. Yeah, probably a lot of casualties that day.
Not too bad. There was only a few that they ended up having to have the aid people come in and cart them off. Uh-huh. But pretty much everybody finished. I know the marathoners were really, they were watching a couple of them pretty closely at the end.
Good. All right, what else? Any other questions?
Not that I can think of.
Oh. If you have any, based on what I've already told you, and I'll send you this recording so you can listen to it again and get some good feedback, just shoot me an email.
Okay.
And if you have a training plan and you want to share it with me just to see what you're doing and make some, give you some feedback, that's fine too.
I do right now, but it definitely needs improvement.
Okay. Why do you say that?
I've just taken basic structure, basic plans and modified them a little bit.
Okay.
But I need to take it to the next level if I'm going to progress like I would like to.
Yeah. I'd agree with you on that one. I used to, the way I used to train back in the day, you know, 27 years ago for quite a few years, I would find, a workout in like runner's world that looked fun. And I would tear it out and I'd put it in a scrapbook. And then I'd go back to my scrapbook and say, oh, I want to do that workout today. And I'd go out and do it. I used to get injured a lot from doing stuff like that because I didn't know anything about pacing at all. And I used to go way, 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 way too hard, way harder than my body fitness was wanting me to. And I'd get injured. So find a plan, stick to it, trust it, and you'll be fine.
Wendy, it seemed like you really enjoyed that conversation with Craig. And we've done this a couple of times in the past, a few times. I remember there was one guy who was preparing for Ironman Chattanooga, maybe, as his first Ironman.
He did. So really, I think that might have been our first consultation that we put on the podcast. He contacted me because he had done his first Ironman. Uh-huh. He trained for 9 months and he wanted to talk to a coach about it because he learned a lot. So he wanted to, you know, share with me what he learned. And then I provided some feedback, about how to kind of move forward with it. And I think it was a really good for our listeners, cause I know there's a lot of people out there, at least in our T2 endurance group, that are, you know, 70.3 and 140.6 wannabes. And mm-hmm. So hopefully they got a lot of good messages from a first timer.
You know, it's almost like going to a seminar where you can see two people on stage talking back and forth, and you are an active listener and you're taking notes to hear the questions that come up between two people, like a coach and athlete, and you go, you know what, I had that same question, or I never thought of that, and here's the answer to something that now could help me in the future. So I think this can really develop into something more for our listeners, the educational part of it. But if you have any feedback, what do you suggest here, Wendy?
Yeah, if any of our listeners have any feedback or if they have any questions based on what we discussed, we'd love to hear from you on voicemail. You can go to speedpipe.com/endurancehour. You can join our T2 Endurance Club Facebook group, ask questions, provide feedback, constructive, negative, positive is always nice. Or you can just shoot me an email, t2coachwendy@gmail.com, and let me know. I like talking triathlon with newbies, you know, experienced athletes as well. I have, you know, going on 27 years experience of triathlon. 27 years ago was a lot different than what it was today. So I just like to share my experience with other athletes. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to hear from you guys.
And you can sign up for our newsletter on endurancehour.com. You'll see a red envelope on the right-hand side. Each week, we send out a new newsletter with recaps from the previous podcasts. We also have workouts of the week or movements of the week, some swim analysis videos of some of our athletes that we work with. Also, there's some really great discount codes that we have acquired as a team, including discounts to Blue 70, Rudy Project, the Stride Running Power Meter, and this exclusive 33% off discount to any of our plans on Training Peaks. So to get those, please go to endurancehour.com and just sign up for our newsletter. It's free, and you get a lot of great bonuses on a weekly basis, including podcast recaps like this one. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, all the information is there. And endurancehour@gmail.com, if you're rather just send us an email question, that works too. So I know you said it in the beginning, but it's been about a half hour or so. Just give me a quick preview of what we're going to hear on part two of the episode.
So part two is specifically about triathlon. So Kind of similar questions about, you know, getting faster speed, but more importantly, going from a sprint distance. He did his first sprint distance September of 2017, and he wants to progress to a 70.3. So we had a nice chat about what people have done in the past. Some people just skip the sprint and jump to a 70.3, and why, you know, kind of the pros and cons of that. And then we talk about just a proper way, you know, experiencing how to do that as a lifestyle change, not as a bucket list one and done. And then we talk about this, just the sport of triathlon in general and where it's headed, where it was and where it's headed.
And depending on where you are on your triathlon journey, whether you're getting into your first triathlon, you want to do a sprint triathlon for the first time, we have a free 8-week course, which includes videos before every training week on endurancehour.com under the training plans link. You can just download a PDF there, but we also have beginner plans for the Olympic distance, 70.3, full distance, and then advanced distances as well. So if you are that sprint athlete or Olympic athlete looking to make that jump to the half or full distance, we've got plans that will work for all of those that I think you might find interesting. So that's on endurancehour.com under the training plans link. All right, so next episode, 257, we'll have part two with Craig and Wendy. That's coming up in a couple of days here on iTunes. It'll also be on endurancehour.com. So for Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Adios.
Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. There's my faith in lost, that's all. What's I'm begging you, save a little soul. Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings. Walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine.